Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, in for Brian Lehrer. The New York murder rate is spiraling. Luckily, it's going in a downward direction. The rate of homicides in New York City was over 2,000 in 1990. Now it looks like we're heading for a number below 500 for this year. As Sam Roberts in the New York Times put it yesterday, there could be more people killing themselves than there are killing other people for the first time in nearly half a century. That's how we measure progress in New York. With me now to talk about why this is and who the typical murderer is and the typical murder victim is today, we have Andrew Carman. He's a criminologist and professor of sociology at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Professor Carman, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Earl.
Put this into context for us. How much of a plunge in the rate has there been in the past 10 years?
Well, it's unprecedented. It's never happened before. The proper word might even be a crash, just like a stock market crash. As you just mentioned, the bloodiest year was 1990, when over 2,245 New Yorkers got killed by fellow New Yorkers. And as you projected, this year, it looks like less than 500 people will be killed. So that's down almost 80%.
How does that compare to the rest of the country?
Well, the drop in crime has been a nationwide phenomenon in the last 5 to 10 years, mostly the late 90s, and since the start of the new century, the crime rate has leveled off. So nowhere else has crime fallen year after year at such a pace as in New York City. And by crime, I mean murders, robberies, burglaries, car thefts. So street crime across the board has been declining, and public safety has been improving since around 1990. For the rest of the country, it's been improving from around mid-90s until the early part of the century. But we keep dropping, and they've stabilized.
And why is that so significant?
Well, I think you'll find on a number of levels that the drop in crime is very beneficial to all of us. First of all, of course, a lot of people live longer, or lives are saved. And second of all, there's a lot more economic activity. Stores can stay open and thrive, and real estate prices go up because people want to live in what were formerly crime-ridden neighborhoods. And the everyday fear of being targeted is a problem that we don't have to worry about as much. So there are a great many benefits. Tourists from across the globe and around the country are flocking to New York City's attractions because they feel safer.
One thing I noticed was the demise or the removal of a lot of those counter-to-ceiling bulletproof glass barriers that you used to find in almost every bank you can think of. Really very interesting kind of cultural change. Makes you want to go to the bank and not the ATM.
Well, that's a whole other story, but I know that the police commissioner has faulted some of the banks for being too user-friendly and in that sense inviting robbers to try out their skills. But yes, in general, it is true that people might be relaxing their guard as crime continues to drop.
There's a popular theory that the demise of the crack epidemic led to some of this fall off. Is there any reality to that?
Yes, I think that a great deal of the street crime of the late 80s and early 90s was fueled by the crack epidemic in a number of ways. A lot of the violence could be traced back to the drug trade, where dealers were fighting over turf, shooting at each other, and innocent bystanders were being hit by stray bullets. And people desperate for money to pay for crack were committing a lot of property crimes, and people high under the influence of a powerful stimulant were acting out of character. So I'm sure that the crack epidemic is a big part of the story about why crime peaked in the late 80s and early 90s.
You're listening to 93.9 and AM 820 WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Errol Lewis of the Daily News, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. We're talking about the record drop in New York's murder rate, and we can take your calls on this. How does the murder rate make you feel? How does this change, this crash, as Professor Carman put it? Does it make you feel safer? How has it affected your life? Do you remember what it felt like when it peaked around 1990? Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. Professor Carman, how low do you think the murder rate can actually go? The Times story said a rate below 400 might be unrealistic. It would put us lower than Honolulu.
Well, I'm not sure Honolulu is the city for comparison, but other huge cities with 8 million people like London, and Tokyo and even Hong Kong have much lower crime rates. It shows that it can be done. But I think that we won't reach those lower proportions unless we tackle the root causes of crime. And that means getting at the conditions that breed street crime.
Does that notion of root causes... I had a discussion about this just recently with Professor Fred Siegel at Cooper Union. Does the root causes notion run counter to what we've seen in New York as far as the broken windows policing theory, which doesn't really address root causes, but just tries to make an early and relatively certain intervention when something goes wrong as far as public disorder?
Yes, well, you've raised the issue of what explanations can be marshaled to account for the drop in crime, and I think you've touched upon the biggest debate there is. One point of view, and I think Professor Siegel represents that, one point of view is that it's not necessary to tackle the root causes of crime, that effective policing and effective prosecution, arresting more people, convicting them, sending them to prison, will do the job. The other point of view, which I'm representing in our discussion today, is that we must get at the root causes if we really want crime to diminish as a social problem. And that means getting at the problem of gun toting, young people carrying guns around, drug taking and drug dealing, street gang fighting. We have to tackle dysfunctional families, a failing school system. We must do something about the chronic unemployment and underemployment at wages that are insufficient to live on. We have to tackle bad housing, lack of recreational opportunities, jails and prisons that are the breeding ground for more criminal activity. So the root cause argument looks at all our other social problems, which are deeply entrenched, and sees connections with street crime.
The New York Times article we mentioned says that murder discriminates and that the typical person committing homicide today is a young black male. How has this changed from when the murder rate was at its peak?
Well, the sad part is that it hasn't changed in terms of proportions. It has changed in terms of actual numbers. But that's the point, isn't it? That the root cause argument is supported by the fact that most of the people who get involved in street crime, as perpetrators or victims, are drawn from the poorest neighborhoods, poverty-stricken families, troubled homes, poor schools. And fortunately, not as many young people from those backgrounds are getting involved in street crime as they did 10 or 15 years ago. In other words, it's to their credit, they're showing the good sense of not getting involved in guns and drugs and gangs to such a degree, because that's a counterproductive, ineffective, self-destructive type of rebellion that a lot of young people get caught up in.
One recent finding is that strangers now commit just 16% of murders, which is down from 33% in 1991. What does that say about the sources and the opportunities for that kind of crime?
Well, it shows that robbery is down, which is mostly a stranger crime, and some robberies do lead to the death of victims. It also shows that drug dealing and turf battles are down. So it's a positive development, because if you are attacked by a stranger, there isn't as much preparation or as much as you can do as if you are these days attacked by someone you know. Then there are steps that can be taken to prevent these types of assaults.
I'm Errol Lewis of the Daily News, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. We're taking audience calls at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. And Steve from the Bronx, you're on the air. Good morning.
The murder rate in New York City is down from 2,200 to under 600. But I lived in a town in the Middle East, a high-density urban environment with 150,000 people, relatively poor people compared with the people around them, and they had five policemen for 150,000 people, and all stationed in the neighboring town because the people didn't want them. And if that town of 150,000 were the size of New York, they would have six murders per year.
Steve, what town is this?
It's part of the Tel Aviv urban area, but I don't want to give the specific name of the town.
I've been to Tel Aviv, and
right.
I saw...
Tel Aviv is like a regular metropolitan city, but
sure.
Within the Tel Aviv metropolitan area, there's another separate city, No fence around it. The same buses go through it, but it operates in a different law altogether. It operates on traditional Jewish law. And there are almost no televisions in the whole town, and there are schools that will expel a student from the school if they find a television in the home. But the murder rate, which is one of the statistics that's most difficult to fake, if it were the size of New York, would be 6 murders per year. That is 2 orders of magnitude lower than New York City.
Okay. Thank you for calling, Steve. Professor, what do you think of that? Do other situations like that make New York seem maybe like it's not doing as well as it could?
Well, sure. There are many places around the world that are quieter. And the theme of our discussion today, that the murder rate might drop below 500, that would sound positively shocking to most people around the world who live in more peaceful locations. But for us, it's a big improvement from 2,245 down to less than 500. But it does, once again, underscore the possibility that people could live more harmoniously if we tackle the root causes.
One of the root causes that's being kicked around, I understand, in criminology circles is the rise of methamphetamine as a drug of choice. What impact do you think that might have on New York City?
Well, for many years, the Drug Enforcement Administration has warned that the methamphetamine epidemic has been moving eastward and would eventually hit New York City. And there have been a handful of articles that do say that some circles in New York City are getting into methamphetamine, but generally it hasn't hit yet. But that just, again, underscores the need for an understanding of why crime is down so sharply, because now a new drug epidemic, which is said to be worse than crack because it's made from artificial ingredients and it lasts longer, so it's not as easy to cut off as cocaine might be, this new epidemic looming on the horizon might cause the crime rate to go back up. So we really need to figure out why crime is down so sharply. We have competing claims. We have different understandings, different theories. We need to find this out. New York City is really in the spotlight. We're at a crossroads now. If we had a blue ribbon commission set up to get to the bottom of this mystery and solve it once and for all, then I think we'd be better prepared in case methamphetamine causes the crime rate to go up, as it has in other parts of the country.
Well, I imagine you're in touch with, and in fact, at John Jay, you instruct many of the leaders of the various criminal justice agencies.
Sure.
Is there a discussion within those circles, the DAs and the police and the corrections officers, about how to keep making this rate go down and how to get ready for some of these oncoming waves?
Well, certainly every agency in law enforcement is trying to innovate and test out new strategies and evaluate the effectiveness of what they're doing.
One root cause, I don't know if it's a root cause or just a statistical fact, is that since it's young men who disproportionately commit crimes, the fact that we have what's called the echo boom, meaning the grandchildren of the baby boomers who were born between 1945 and 1962, the fact that they're aging into that high crime category now means that America in general, and I guess New York included, will see some kind of a rise in crime. Is that on your radar screen at all?
Yes, I think you've touched upon what's called the demographic argument, and you're absolutely right. To some extent, the crime rate depends on the proportion of people who are in their high crime-prone years, which for young men is between 16 and 24. Now, in the 90s, New York City benefited from the fact that there were fewer people in that age group living within the 5 boroughs. But as you said, this echo boom is developing. The number of young people in their high crime-prone years will go up, and one way to be prepared for them is to absorb them into the college scene, because many studies have shown that young people who are spending time on campus rather than street corners or in factories are much less likely to get involved in guns and drugs and gangs.
We have a question, Professor Carmen, from Fred in Queens. I'll let him ask it. I don't want to get it wrong.
Sure.
Fred, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, and I'm nervous. I'm not a frequent caller. But my question is this. If the murder rate going down was partially caused, however you say it, by the crack epidemic disappearing, I wonder what made the crack epidemic disappear. And I
okay.
live in...
Fair enough.
Okay?
Very good question.
Yeah,
thank
sure.
you.
Sure. I would want to overstate the case. The crack epidemic is not raging, but it has diminished greatly, but it hangs on. There's no doubt that there's still a crack problem. There's always been a heroin problem, which was overshadowed by the arrival of crack in the mid-'80s. So there's still a very serious drug abuse problem, but it has been driven indoors. There aren't the turf battles on street corners or in parks like there used to be. So to some extent, the drug trade has become more routinized, more regulated internally, not by the authorities, but on their own. And so a lot of the violence surrounding it has subsided. But as you pointed out, a new drug appearing on the horizon, for example, methamphetamine, could open up all these old wounds, and there could be turf battles between dealers, and there could be desperate users, again, as we saw in the bad old days of the late 80s and early 90s. But crack is still very much with us. It's just not the problem it used to be. It's not the rage or fad that grips young people as it had in the late 80s.
Professor, the New York Times article mentioned another interesting crime statistic that has not gone down in the last decade. 40% of murders still go unsolved. Can you explain the prevalence of these so-called cold cases? Is this just something that the rest of us just didn't know anything about?
Well, if you watch a lot of television, as one of the first callers implied, you might get some misimpressions. By the end of the hour, most murders are solved on television. But in real life, you've pointed out something important, and that is that the clearance rate hovers around two-thirds. In New York City, the cold case squad was doing an excellent job in the 90s and was catching up with killers who thought that they had gotten away with murder. And so New York City's murder clearance rate was very high in the late 90s. It was well over 80%. But a recent article in your Daily News pointed out that this year the police are having trouble solving current cases. Only about 42% of current cases are being solved. So there very much is a need for a cold case squad to go over the cases that were unsolved, and perhaps with new techniques, DNA techniques and other evidence coming to light, might be possible to bring these murderers to justice.
With all of the attention on television, I often wonder if you're going to find a bunch of amateur sleuths out there who try to assist the police in cracking these cases.
Well, if there's one area where they ought to help out, it's car theft, because car thefts around the country are solved at only 14%. And in New York City, the most recent figures show that only about 7% of car thefts are being solved. So if amateur sleuths want to keep their eyes peeled for chop shops, for abandoned cars, for cars that are being broken into, perhaps they can boost that rate.
Great. That'll be the last word. Thank you very much, Professor Andrew Carman, criminologist and professor of sociology at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. I'm Errol Lewis of the Daily News, in for Brian Lehrer. Thanks very much, and we'll see you tomorrow.